Welcome to Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between, the podcast from Bespoke Family. I'm Bex.
And I'm Claire. Thanks for joining us as we tackle the ups and downs of life with children, helping you to get the best out of your time together. No rules, no judgment, just guidance. So grab a cuppa and let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to this episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. And this week's episode is all about surrogacy. And we are so delighted to welcome Mariel Burnell, who is a three-time surrogate, to talk all about it. So welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Not at all. Thank you for coming on.
So I think, you know, the world of surrogacy is definitely kind of increased, and there's a lot more questions around it, I think, and a lot more people looking into it for various different reasons. So I suppose it's a bit like, just tell us a little bit more about you and how did you end up coming into the world of surrogacy?
Well, you're absolutely right. I think surrogacy has really kind of hitting a boom as of right now, especially here in the United States. And everybody kind of gets into it a little bit differently. Some people might know somebody who struggled with infertility and started looking out to help a family member or a friend. Some people might be looking into it for the compensation that is available here in the United States. For me personally, I had had three of my own babies, loved being a parent. And I wasn't one who always wanted children. In fact, I was like, nope, I'm not, I don't think that's for me. So, but God had other plans. And once I had one, I was like, well, I gotta have another one. And then three later, I was like, okay, I'm good. My hands are full. I'm good. And so then one day, a girlfriend of mine was looking into surrogacy. And so she said, hey, would you ever think about being a surrogate? And I took a minute and I thought about it and I said, you know what? I absolutely would. I loved being pregnant. My children have changed my lives in an amazing and wonderful and beautiful way. To be able to do that for somebody would be pretty amazing. And so then that seed had been planted. And so I started doing research and found an agency. And then the rest is kind of history. So...
Wow.
That's really how I get into it.
Do you think because you had really good pregnancies, that made a big difference to the decision to kind of go for it? Like you've had positive experiences?
Oh, 3,000%. I would, like I said, I was so lucky, never sick a day in my life, was able to be active all the way up until deliveries. I had had fairly easy deliveries. To be able to carry a human inside of you is such a blessing and gift. And I truly, truly looked at it that way. And the fact that I was able to do it three times was just so amazing. And to be able to experience it again without the responsibilities of then taking care of a child was definitely appealing to me. So I got to do this amazing, beautiful thing. And then not have to have the sleepless nights and the diapers and all of those fun things that come along with parenthood. So it just really worked for me. And so I brought it up to my husband and I said, what do you think about this? And he's like, I'm sorry, what? And I said, yeah, you know, I'll be a surrogate, so I'll carry a baby and then it won't be ours. So it'll go back to their family. And he was like, okay. So sure, I guess, if this is something you really want to do. And so with his support, I dove right in. And it has changed my life in such a meaningful and impactful way. And I wouldn't be the person I am sitting before you today if I hadn't found my way to it. So I am very, very thankful for having that opportunity and being able to be a surrogate.
How did you explain it to your children?
So what I tell folks now is that it wasn't the children in my life that had the questions or the misconceptions or ideas of how things should go. Children really take what you give them as fact and face value. And I was their mom and they trusted me. And so my youngest was 3 when I first started. My oldest was 7. So we had a range. And then when I completed my last surrogacy, my oldest was 16 and my youngest was then 10. And so their ideas changed as we continued to do it, but I presented it to them just that, hey, you know how mom, you know, had you guys, I have been really, really blessed and not every family has that ability. And it's really important to me to try to do this for another family. And it will be no way your brother or sister, because it is their baby. And so I'm just gonna, you know, be pregnant and have this baby and then give that to them. And what do you think about that? And they're like, okay. And then that was it. And, you know, I actually asked them recently, I said, hey, you know, cause I get this question all the time, you know, oh, was it traumatic for your children, you know, to think that they were having this brother or sister? And I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, and so then I went back and asked them, and so I can give you their direct quotes. So Lily, who's my eldest, 18, she was 13 during my second and actually asked to be in the delivery room. So she saw me birth this baby for this family. And she had the most beautiful statement saying how it was such a big part of her life and to watch me be selfless and do all of these things to bring this baby into the world. And then to actually see that moment of the mom catching her baby and putting her baby to her chest was just something that was so beautiful and impactful for her. And she was like, it's something I will never forget and is definitely influenced who I am today. I asked my 15-year-old and his response was, it was cool, I guess. and then I asked my now 11-year-old and I said, hey, what did you think about that? How did that impact your life? And she goes, well, mom, to be honest, you were pregnant for like half my life. You would go on a trip and you'd come home and you'd be pregnant. So it was just normal. And I think that is really at the heart of it. It was our normal. And, you know, my kids got to meet my families. So they knew the entire time that this was not our baby. And then they got to reap the benefits of having some new amazing people in their lives. And again, you know, they thought it was pretty cool watching a baby grow and kick inside mom and doing all these things. So they thought it was just really cool. I will say that I did get an interesting phone call from my daughter's first grade teacher at one point, because I did not share it with everybody in my life. But my daughter did. So I got a call one day from her teacher saying, Miss Bernal, you know, I'm just wanting to check in on you because Evie said that you're having a baby, but that it's not her brother or sister and that you're going to be giving it up. Does your family need some support? And I said, you know, she's absolutely right, but let me explain it a little bit. So in a long-winded way, that's how I handled it, you know, and my kids just took it and they took it for what it was. And I think that all it, if did nothing negatively to them whatsoever, and in fact, only added to the richness of their life experience.
So for the benefit of the first grade teacher, and some other people that perhaps don't understand what surrogacy is, mm-hmm. could you just kind of briefly explain what it is and who might want to use a surrogate?
Absolutely.
And why?
Absolutely. So basically there's two types of surrogacy. There's traditional surrogacy and then there's gestational carrying, which in traditional surrogacy you use the surrogate's own genetics. And so it is an egg. It's usually done by insemination, but then they are genetically linked to that surrogate. That's far less common nowadays, now with the invention of science, just, you know, going way far and beyond. So now we can take other people's genetics and then we can just be gestational carriers. So it can be the intended mom and dad's genetics, or we could use donor eggs and sperm, but they create those embryos and then those embryos are transferred to the surrogate to carry for the duration of the pregnancy. And so that's what I did. So I worked with two different families and had three babies that were all not my own. So again, that's something that is a real big misconception, I think, in the surrogacy world. People think, oh, well, how could you give up this baby? Wasn't that traumatizing for you? And I said, it was not my baby. It was always their baby. So I was just giving their baby back. And that baby was finally where that baby truly belonged. So it was, there was never an instance where I felt maternal towards those babies I carried. I loved those babies. Each and every baby I carried, I absolutely loved and wanted to protect. And I felt more like an aunt. You know, that I just felt connected to this human, and I wanted to absolutely give this human the absolute best chance of making it to their family. And so it wasn't, but it was never anything maternal or sad. It was always pure joy when I was able to give those babies to their families.
It's such an amazing thing. I do think it is a misconception very often that the surrogate is also the egg donor. And I think that has to kind of be made very clear now that that's very unusual.
That is highly, highly unusual.
Yeah. And you're much more kind of like an incubator for
exactly
this baby, for this baby. Yeah.
Exactly.
So is it more, what's the reasons behind why families might choose a surrogate? Is there a variety of different reasons or?
Lots of different reasons. So in some instances, there has been a trauma with one of the parents with their reproductive capabilities. And so whether they're had a hysterectomy, whether they have an incompetent cervix, whether there's some immunodeficiency where it attacks the embryos and causes miscarriages. I mean, there are so many reasons why women can't carry. So in that instance, somebody might want to use a surrogate where they can, their genetics are fine and they just can't carry. So that's one of the reasons why somebody would want to use a surrogate. And then we have a lot of same-sex couples who don't have a uterus. And so if they want a biological child, then they can utilize surrogacy to be able to achieve that. And I think that lots of people have the argument about there's so many, you know, kids that need adopting, and absolutely, we all absolutely understand and appreciate that there's all sorts of ways to create families, but it's not for everybody. And those have their own, each path to parenthood has its own pros and cons. So there's always something to think about. And so it's really important that everybody can be empowered to make their own decisions when it comes to their path to parenthood.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So how does the whole arrangement work? Like, what happens? How do people find you? How do you find people? And like, can you decide who you are a surrogate parent? Is that what you would call?
Well, I was a surrogate. We would just call them, we were a surrogate for the intended parents. So absolutely. So there's lots of ways that this happens, especially because we have a lot of different regulations that are so different and a little bit more open than in a lot of other countries. The way I chose to do it, and I would highly recommend a surrogate or intended parent looking for a surrogate, is to use an agency. So we have lots of agencies here that are, respectable. They follow all of the guidelines that are put in place by reproductive medicine here in the United States. An agency's role is to vet both surrogates and intended parents and coordinate the journeys of what we call them to get you from the very beginning where that, you know, seed is planted all the way to having that baby. So on the surrogate side, you would apply. And because not every woman can be a surrogate, there are really strict guidelines, age requirements, weight requirements. You have to be financially stable. There's lots of different things that go into it. And then if you qualify, then there's medical screening, there's psychological screening to make sure that you're mentally and physically healthy enough to undertake a surrogacy journey. And then on the intended parent side, same. You know, they're vetted completely. So that way you already know by the time that you meet a possible match, whether it's a surrogate or intended parent, that there have been those steps taken to ensure that everybody is in this for the right reasons, is healthy, is ready to go. There are boards online where people will advertise that they're surrogates or intended parents just because it is such a need. And, and for some people that works, and they do their own medical screening, they do their own, you know, attorneys and work out the way the payment compensation works if they're being compensated. But again, an agency really provides those services and, you know, that insurance that everything is going to go to plan. So that's what I did. So once I went through all of my screening, I developed a profile, it had some pictures and just kind of, I explained why I wanted to be a surrogate, what my life looked like, what I was looking for as far as intended parents. And so it's almost like a dating site. And then, and then you get to switch some profiles and then you say, oh, this couple looks really interesting. They look like they, you know, align on a lot of my values. I would really love to work with them. And if they say the same thing about you, then you get to go to a match meeting, which is where that's when you meet them and you really get to talk a little bit more about it, get a feel for one another and see if it's something that you really want to commit to. And so that's how that works as far as an agency role is. And then they're there to help facilitate and work that communication and help you ask the right questions and make sure that you're really getting an understanding of who each other are and why you're doing what you're doing.
And then obviously you do the embryo transfer. Is that the right terminology?
That is absolutely the right terminology. So
get me.
So yes. So then after I was matched, I went to their fertility clinic where their embryos were housed and worked with their reproductive endocrinologist. So then I had to be cleared by their specific reproductive endocrinologist. So even though I had all of this medical screening done prior, you go, you have more blood work done, an ultrasound done to make sure your uterus is looking good. Everything is good to go. And then once that's cleared, then you can go ahead and get on a calendar, you get medications because an IVF pregnancy is very different than a traditional pregnancy. There are some doctors that will do natural cycles without medication, but most likely there's going to be some medication involved just to make sure that your lining is doing what it needs to be doing and you're maintaining that pregnancy through that first kind of early days. So I was very lucky that I never had any issues with my lining or my labs. And so everything went as planned for every transfer I ever had. And then I flew out for the transfer and, they would put in the embryo. I would wait 24 hours and be on bed rest to ensure that I was cool, calm, and relaxed, to give the embryo the best chance at implanting. And then I would go home and wait a few weeks and see if we were successful.
I didn't realize. I think that's quite interesting that I didn't really think about it being the same as IVF in terms of the way that the whole process works. I mean, it makes sense clearly, but you know, you just, I don't think that I kind of equated the two, but yeah, you know, like I say, it makes sense. But so that's quite interesting the way that you've described that. It is, that's exactly what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So do you then do a pregnancy test? You do that? And
yes. Yes. So it can be agreed upon whether you're going to do at-home tests or not. Some people choose not to, and they just want to wait for the blood test. I always tested. I tested all the time, every day until that blood test. And if you are familiar with some of the surrogacy boards, like all of us do it, they'll take pictures of their tests. And be like, what do you guys think about this one? Is this a good one? Because we're all just so wanting to be successful. All of my families were open to me testing. So I always did at-home tests. I announced one of my pregnancies to my intended family I put a bun on my stomach and I took a picture. And it was your bun, my oven.
And
that's how I chose to do it. So then there'll be a blood test about 9 to 10 days post-transfer. And then you'll do another one a couple of days to check and make sure HCG is doubling at the rate that looks like it's going to be okay. And then you go for a heartbeat ultrasound. And then at about between 9 and 12 weeks is when you'll be released to your own OB. And then your pregnancy goes very similarly to how you are used to. There's just a couple more people involved. So that's basically how that goes.
So do you have regular contact with your families during your pregnancy? Is there kind of that checking in? Is there like taking photos of bump? And like, I suppose it depends on how close by you live as well, and all of those sorts of things.
Right. And most times your intended families aren't close to you. So those are all things that you talk about at those match meetings. Like what do you expect to have as far as your communication and relationship are concerned? Some people want that close relationship. They want you to be as involved as possible. I was definitely one of those women. Some of them really want to protect those boundaries and that space. And for some intended parents, especially if there's some things in their background that, you know, they want to, you know, protect themselves emotionally, they prefer to have firmer boundaries in place. So that's why it's so important to have those conversations prior to pregnancy. So I talked, I texted, I had my intended parents would send me voice memos so I could play their voices for their babies so that they could recognize their voices once they were there. I journaled and I would send pictures of what I journaled to my intended moms. And so that they could really read what I was going through daily and really kind of walk that pregnancy with me. And then I would put, you know, ultrasound pictures or little mementos from the pregnancy. And then I gave that to them upon delivery, if they so chose to. I didn't know if maybe one day, you know, the babies would grow up and want to see what were we doing? And what did that look like? So that was really important to me. So that was really important to me. It was really important to my intended family. So I made sure that I included them every way that I could. They would fly in for, you know, ultrasounds or big appointments. And then, again, I was lucky enough to have them there for delivery. And moms got to catch babies, and it was just an absolutely beautiful experience.
How many people do you have with you when you're giving labor? Because I'm assuming your husband is there and then your intended parents as well, or and your daughter.
And my daughter.
Yeah.
Since COVID happened, things have changed a little bit. I think they're relaxing now, but I was lucky enough. My last surrogate delivery was in February of 2020. So it was right before the shutdown. So they were still allowing folks to be there. So for my first delivery it was just my husband and my intended parents. Second one was my intended parents and my daughter. And my third had my intended parents, my husband, and a grandma were in the delivery room.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that must have been a weird experience for your husband, because presumably he was at the birth of your three children mm-hmm. as well.
Yes.
And so then, I mean, obviously he's there for you, isn't he?
Yes.
That's the thing. Yeah. So he was, I think that's lovely.
He was there for me. And my husband is... he's got a real good sense of humor. You know, he was playing Salt and Peppa Push at, you know, during delivery. Him and my intended, you know, dads would really bond over, you know, goofing off with all the different medical equipment and pretending to be doctors. So it was really always a fun experience. Again, like I was so lucky where there was never any medical intervention needed. So it was honestly a party every time we got to do it. And so, yeah, when they said, hey, can my mom come in? Sure, bring her in. Like I wasn't one to shy away from any of that. I wanted everybody who wanted to be there, because what a special moment to be able to welcome a new soul into the world. So if they had a connection to that baby, I was welcome to have them there.
It almost feels like having a surrogacy pregnancy is made into when you're pregnant with your children, mm-hmm. like as a, it kind of is that's the thing that happens, and then you have the child and da 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 da. But it makes it a really special thing, doesn't it? You've made it really special for those parents, and you've documented it, and they've been there, and it's been a real event. I think that that's such a lovely thing to feel like, because I'm sure lots of people think, oh my goodness, having a surrogate, have our baby froze, it's not going to be as special, perhaps that's what they might think. But from the way you've described it, I think you've made it really that special occasion for those parents, and they kind of really feel like they've been through it with you, like you say, they've walked that pregnancy path with you. It's lovely.
I absolutely tried to do that. And I think that it was never anything that I had really thought about infertility. Again, I didn't want a baby and I was just given one. It was so easy. So that wasn't something I had ever really thought about or considered. And then with my first family that I worked with, I had a loss. And I remember sitting in the waiting room, waiting to see my obstetrician, knowing full well that I had lost that baby. And there was a young girl in the waiting room, heavily pregnant, who had a toddler running around. She wasn't paying any attention to the toddler. And here I was, who had this amazing couple, who had everything to give to a baby, had everything, done everything right. We did everything right, and we couldn't make it work. And I think that was the first time that it hit me as to what infertility looks like for these families and what I could possibly give to them. And so some people find a loss during surrogacy really challenging, and it was absolutely heart-wrenching and eye-opening for me. Some people don't want to move forward after a loss because it's just too hard emotionally. For me, it had the opposite effect, where I was even that much more determined to be able to help a family, because I think I finally understood what it must look like from the other side. So I wanted to, once we were finally successful, I wanted to be able to provide that for them as best I could. And again, it's something that, you know, I cannot even describe. Having your own baby is obviously what most women say is the best day of their lives, right? It's the day that you truly fell in love. And so to be able to be a part of this dream that people didn't even know was even feasible, and then to watch these moms grab their babies was just the absolute most soul-nourishing thing I have ever experienced, even beyond my own. Not that that takes that away, but again, just to see these people achieve that was just something so, so, so amazing and phenomenal. And I would do it again 100 times over if they'd let me.
You're giving me goosebumps.
I've kind of two questions. One, do you have to have had your own children to be able to be a surrogate? And the second question is there a limit to how many surrogacy pregnancies you can have?
Yes. So again, like I said, it's really important that we're all following medical guidelines. And so the current guidelines say that after 6 pregnancies, it's not a good idea. You're now put into this high risk category. That's the answer to number one. And you can't have more than 4 C-sections, typically, again, because then that puts you in a higher risk category. For me, I had had 2 C-sections, but then I was able to VBAC my daughter. So then I VBAC'd my other 3 successive pregnancies. So I wasn't taken out of the running by C-sections. But it is a requirement that you have your own children, and not only having birthed a child, but raising a child. Because we want to make sure that you are financially, mentally, emotionally stable enough to be able to do this. Yeah. So some people will think, oh, well, I got pregnant, but I chose not to have the baby, or something happened, but I can do this for somebody. And that's not the case. It has to be, you have to have had your own child and be raising your own child to be a surrogate.
And is there kind of counseling support and things that you would be required to have?
And again, that's another benefit of having an agency is I don't think we've touched upon this. I am now a journey coordinator working with an agency here in the United States. So now I get to help other women achieve that dream that I had. So we follow along with them. We're there as their support. We have psychological support, again, with that those clearances. And we have those are built into contracts that finances are available to them if they need mental health services throughout the pregnancy or postpartum. And then so that way we ensure that if any, because circumstances change, things happen, and sometimes, you know, people need that extra support. So that's, again, another safety net that agencies provide mm-hmm. to both intended parents and surrogates alike.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when you've had the babies, you've given the babies over? Mm-hmm. Is that the end of it, or do you keep in touch?
Again, it depends. It depends how the journey went for everybody. And it depends on that relationship that you have built. I will say that I work with three families and I keep in contact with two, but I'm really close with one. So the first family I worked with, like I stated, we were unsuccessful. And then things happened in my life where I could no longer try to work with them as their surrogate. So they were matched with another wonderful surrogate, had their baby. So they got to have that opportunity. And I cheered them on all the way. But then life happens and you kind of lose touch. And my second family that I worked with, I delivered their baby in December of 2016. And we talk, you know, on birthdays, they'll send me a picture and be like, look how big he's getting. and that's pretty much the extent of it. My other family, though, we grew very, very close. I delivered two babies for them. And I mean, I get pictures, I think, daily from them.
Oh, wow.
And they've just become an extension of our family. So it just really depends, and those relationships develop organically and depending on how far you are. And again, lives get so busy. And so again, social media is great because we can, you know, stay in touch on Facebook, and, you know, it's really easy to see those pictures and be like, oh, wow, look how big they're getting, or, oh, it's so wonderful, they had their first day of school, or something like that. So again, it just depends.
And you haven't had any of the stress around it. That's the bonus.
That's the bonus. You know, I will tell you, Claire, I told you I had my hands full and I knew it. And, you know, so I have a very vivid memory of my husband and I walking out of the hospital, no baby, high-fiving, yeah, look what we just did. And then we got to go home. I got to go have a nice dinner. I wasn't worried.
You slept through the night.
You know, it was really... really fantastic. And so so yeah, and then in the next day wake up, text them, how's it going, huh, you know. And so now I was getting the updates.
Yeah,
it was a real role reversal there. So that's how it went. But like I said,
it's just like being a really cool auntie, isn't it? It's that whole kind of thing of you can go in, you can do all what you want to do, like you can hype the children up if you want to when you still see them and stuff like that. And then you get to walk away.
Oh.
You get all the nice bits.
Yep, absolutely. All the nice bits. and it's even more because, you know, you have that connection that you brought them into this world, and there's that, just that special connection there. So it's even more so, I think, personally. So it's been really, really, like I said, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I hadn't found my way into it. So I'm very, very, very lucky, and that's why I chose to get into being a journey coordinator. My degree was in communications, and my husband's active duty military, so we moved around a lot. And now my kids got older, I had the opportunity to reflect on what do I really want to do, and when was I the happiest? And it was being a surrogate and giving this to families. And so that's why I decided to get into this. And now I'm living my dream. I tell my team all the time how it's not a job, and all of us feel that way. All of our coordinators are previous surrogates, so we all feel that way. Two of us have definitely been knocked out of the running because of our our history, but you know, we see these intended parents, we're like, we just want to have babies for all of them.
Oh.
so, So it is, we are a different set, I think. But you hear these stories and you just, and again, because it was so easy, you know, and it was so lovely. I mean, why wouldn't I want to do it again if I had the opportunity? So.
Absolutely. And I think it is, it's clearly something that you absolutely love. And to be able to give those parents that experience is just incredible, I think. And seeing those children absolutely grow and develop, it's so special.
It really, really, truly is. Like I said, there's nothing, I can't put it into words what it's like to see a family grow and change. And you know, they'll ask me parenting advice and I'm like, guys, I'm winging it too. And to have that, yeah, and to have that, you know,
yeah,
that connection, right? So, so yeah. So again, you know, I can't say it about it enough. And I think that that's why there's another misconception. A lot of people think that surrogates just do it for the compensation, because like I said, we are compensated in the United States. They typically stipulate that it's, you know, for pain and suffering because you're going through medical procedures and, you know, having a baby is not always the easiest. And so a lot of people think that surrogates are just in it to make money, which absolutely is not the case in most situations. And that's another reason why agencies want to be sure that they are financially stable, that this isn't going to be a source of income for them. So that's another misconception, I think. And, you know, there's a lot of people who feel, oh, you're just selling your body, you know, and it's like, it goes so much deeper.
I think you've made that so clear, though, you know, from the way that you've described it. I think you kind of, until you hear someone like you speaking about it with so much passion and so much empathy for these people that you've helped, I don't think you realize that, you know, you really don't.
Absolutely. And I think that was a misconception that I am always still fighting when people find out I was a surrogate.
I'm sure,
So, you know, again, it wasn't anything that I sought after. It was something I fell into. I'm so lucky I did. And now I get to help educate others on it, which is another one of my favorites, which is why I was so excited to be asked to come on here today. Because I think, you know, taking that mystery away and sharing a little bit about it and learning more about it. I didn't know anybody who was a surrogate before I had done it. And now I know lots of them, and sometimes it feels like, is this like everybody's doing it now?
Yeah.
Because it's just become so popular recently, I feel like, but it's also because of what I'm doing now. But yeah, so I do. I love educating people. I love talking about it because it was such a positive thing in my life.
And what happens, just kind of finally, because I suppose it's kind of the, when you hand the baby over, legally, I mean, I don't know how this happened, you know, the difference between the UK and the US is obviously there are differences, but as much information as you've got would be helpful about legally what happens, about who is on the birth certificate, do you have to change this, you know, what happens?
Every state is different. So for example, I was in Hawaii when I had my first surrogate pregnancy. And in the state of Hawaii, whoever births the baby is on the birth certificate. So okay. I was on that birth certificate for a few weeks. And then, but luckily, again, working with an agency, we connect you with attorneys who are well-versed in the different statutes that go by state. So all contracts and parentage orders are drafted in the state. So as a surrogate, once that pregnancy reaches viability, you are typically restricted from traveling from that state for that very reason. So because those things are already put in motion way before the baby even gets here. And then they're, of course, finalizing, and again, depending on the state you're in, the country that the intended parents are from, kind of what dictates what that looks like. But again, that's why it's so, so important to make sure that you're doing the proper research. Not every attorney knows family law and adoption law and reproductive law here in the United States. And so it is really, really important. And again, to have those conversations so that, that everything is clear moving forward. And I will tell you, most surrogates are like, please make sure I'm not on that birth certificate. You know, that's that's another thing. They think, oh, we want all these babies. No, we don't. We are so grateful to be able to give them back. So we want to make sure we're following all those regulations as well, and make sure that we're doing our part to make sure and that we're signing what needs to be signed to make sure that that legally everything, all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed, to make sure that that runs smoothly.
And that's the I would say from both sides, that's one of the, you know, UK, US, wherever you are in the world, that's, I would say, one of the most important things, isn't it? Research the law in your country, make sure you have all of the right, correct legal stuff set up before you even attempt it. I think that's probably
absolutely look at the agency,
key message there, isn't it?
Look at the attorneys, look at the clinics that you're working with, make sure that they're following all the proper guidelines, and really setting yourself up for success, because that's going to be, it's hard, but again, because it is becoming more popular. And so there are, you know, agencies that are popping up, and there's clinics all over, and different attorneys who think that, oh, just because, you know, I have my license, I can go ahead and draft this contract. Absolutely. And that's not always the case. So absolutely put that time in to do that research. And I encourage anybody who's thinking about it on this as a surrogate side to really, really do that research as well. I was very lucky. I'm going to be 100% honest with you, because I didn't do all the research. I had that friend who had been looking into it before me, and I said, tell me what you did.
So, it's always good to have a friend that's good with their research, isn't it?
100%.
It is.
So, but that's absolutely a vital part of it.
Is there somewhere that we can find out more about you, Muriel, and your story and things like that?
Yeah, so I work for Collective Surrogacy here in the United States. So our website is collectivesurrogacy.com. I have some blogs over there. You can learn about being an intended parent. You can learn about being a surrogate. We have different roadmaps to show you kind of what does a timeline look like to be a surrogate. You know, if I sign up today, am I going to be pregnant next month? No, you're not. So if you want more information about that, we have all of that available for you. On LinkedIn social, you can find me. It's not too hard.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, do you have any other questions, Claire? Is that?
No, I think you've covered
it. We've pretty much gone from conception to birth, haven't we?
We have.
And beyond.
And I think you are just an amazing surrogate, Muriel. Like you. Yeah. You know, not only were you saying that you're very lucky to have been a surrogate for these families, those families are very, very lucky to have found you, because you have been amazing with them. And I'm sure, you know, they're very, very grateful to you for what you've done for them and their baby.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that they've definitely made that clear, and I think most intended parents do as well. They make that clear that they're just so thankful to be able to do something like this. And I know that, you know, we do have a lot of intended parents coming from outside of the United States, because it's not feasible in a lot of other places. And so again, just to be so grateful that I tell all the surrogates that I talk to, potential surrogates that I talk to, I said, you know, because most of these folks, they have embryos waiting. They're just waiting for the right uterus and the right heart to come along to be there for them and give them that opportunity
to make their dream come true.
I mean, and what better dream is there, you know, than becoming a parent and making somebody a mom or dad and bringing another soul into this world. I mean, there's no better dream to support. So I hope that if anybody, you know, wants to reach out to me, I'm a complete open book, transparent. I love, like I said, educating folks on it. I love sharing my story. And so I'm absolutely open to any questions or comments or anything. And again, thank you so much for having me. It's just been such a joy to talk to you both and share a little bit more about it. And I hope that it was interesting to some folks.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on.
You are so welcome.
That's everything for today. Thanks for listening. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, we'd love you to get in touch and let us know. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Bespoke Family, or head to our website. The links are in our show notes.
Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode, and please give us a rating or review if you like what you hear. We're Bex and Claire, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. See you then.